listener.
Kickpod acknowledges the traditional owners and custodians of the land in which we're recording this podcast, the Yulukut Wulan clan of the Boomerang, who are a part of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to our elders, past and present, and extend our respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today.
Welcome to the Kickpod, your D&M on the stuff that matters.
But also the stuff that doesn't. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hi, guys. It's just me. Don't worry, Laura is in this episode. She's in the chat, but she is having some well-deserved break right now. So it's just me in the intro for today. But I'm not going to be in your ears alone for too long because I really want to get straight into today's chat. It is with Ellie, and she is from our Kick community. She actually reached out wanting to share her story, and we are so, so thankful that she did. Ellie is 31 years old, and basically her message said, "I'm currently in the middle of fighting triple negative breast cancer after being diagnosed days after my 31st birthday. I was fit, lived a happy, healthy lifestyle as a nurse, midwife, and had never been sick in my life." So as you can imagine, finding out that news just after your 31st birthday is not something, it's not something you want to hear around any birthday, but so young. So Ellie wanted to come on not just to share her story in the hopes that if anyone else is going through something similar, that they would feel less alone, because she mentioned how lonely it did feel and also being so young. But she also wanted to come on to raise awareness of early detection for young women and also the importance of checking your breasts. So at the end of our conversation with Ellie, we also called Kirsten Pilardi, the CEO of Breast Cancer Network Australia, and she runs through, you know, proper ways to check your breasts or why it's important and how often you should. So yeah, continue to listen on for that chat. But here is Ellie.
Ellie, welcome to the Kick Pod. We are so excited to have you and chat to you, and can't thank you enough for being in our community and being an avid listener of the pod too. Your support means the world.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
We wanted to start with your journey. When did you first know when something wasn't quite right, when something was wrong?
It's actually a little bit of a weird story, but I was in the kitchen cleaning my water bottle and it fell off the bench, and I sort of caught it into my chest, and as a reaction I sort of rubbed my left boob and thought, oh God, that really hurt. And then I was like, oh, that's really quick to get a bruise, and I had a lump there. And I sort of thought, oh, I've never felt that before. But, you know, I know that, you know, I'm a nurse and a midwife. I know that your breast tissue changes with your different times of the month. So I thought, oh, I'll keep an eye on it. I had my husband have a feel of it because I was like, have you ever felt this before? It feels a bit like I've never felt it. So I thought, I'll keep an eye on it for a few weeks. And it sort of didn't go away. It didn't, in my opinion, get any bigger, but I was like, oh, look, I may as well go and get it checked out. I told my mum, and she was a bit like worried about it. So I was like, all right, I'll just go and get a biopsy, and then we can, you know, it's probably just a fibroid or a bit of fatty tissue or whatever. So I went to the GP probably 3 weeks later. And he booked me in for a biopsy and an ultrasound. And he said, look, I don't think it's anything serious. I think it's, you know, you're 31 years old. The only real risk factor that you have is that you have a family history of breast cancer. So my dad's sisters both had breast cancer, and they died when they were in their late 20s and early 30s. Mm-hmm. So it was almost 40 years ago. And back then breast cancer was, they really didn't know much what about it. Mm-hmm. They know a lot more now. So I thought, okay, I'll go and get this done, go and get it sorted out. My husband and I had been saving for our a massive Europe trip. So we've been saving and working really hard, and like, we're going on this big trip overseas. So I was like, I need to get this sorted before we go overseas. So just for peace of mind, so I'm not worrying about it. So I had the biopsy done on the Wednesday, and I was actually on night shift. So I went to work that night, and I made an appointment for late Friday afternoon because I knew that I was going to be sleeping all day, and I didn't want to have to go, you know, go and see the GP. Their appointment, they told me that the biopsy's actually come back as breast cancer. And I was like, I actually didn't believe it. Like, to be honest, it when I heard those words, I was like, no, this isn't happening to me because I'm fit, I'm healthy. Like, I've never ever had a medical problem in my entire life. I've never been to hospital apart from working in one. And I was like, this is wrong. Like, I was absolutely in denial, completely convinced. I was super grateful. My husband came home early from work, so he was with me for that appointment, which I'm so grateful for because I don't know how I would have told him that, you know, was happening. And by that time, we were going to Europe in 7 days, so it was like right before we were going away. And I said to them, you guys better sort this out quick because I'm going to Europe next Saturday. So, like, I'm not waiting around, like, what's going on? Because I didn't believe it. I think when you hear something that's so shocking, and I'm a nurse and a midwife and I look after sick people all the time, and I've learned a lot over my time. I've been doing this job for 12 years now, and I've always had a massive focus on being really healthy and looking after myself. And, you know, I've seen so many people in poor condition and sometimes not of their own doing. And I've always never taken my body for granted. And I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that it was happening. And then I thought, oh God, it's Friday afternoon. I'm going to have to wait until Monday to hear something because that's what happens usually. And all the GP can tell you is that you have breast cancer. So I didn't know whether I'm like riddled with cancer or whether it's just this lump. So it was like, it was quite a hard few until the next day because I was like, oh my God, I don't really know what's going on. And then luckily we have private cover. And we have had that purely because we were going to try and start a family this year. So it was like just an insurance policy for that. And pretty much Saturday morning, I got a phone call at 9 a.m. from a surgeon in Brisbane, and she introduced herself. And the first thing she said to me is, how are you? And I said, well, I don't know what the fuck is going on, but I have breast cancer, which I don't believe it. And she said, you do have breast cancer, Ellie, and I'm going to tell you what's going to happen this week. And I said, I'm supposed to be going to Europe next Saturday. And she's like, you're not going to Europe. Like, we need to get this sorted, like, right now. So pretty much the next week looked like I had another biopsy of my lymph node done. They put a clip on the cancer in my breast, and they told me that the regime was going to be 6 months of IV chemo, and we also needed to start IVF because I had to have my husband and I would like to have a family, and we haven't had a kid yet, so we had to get my eggs out before they started chemo. So that was sort of the priority. And they put a port in my chest, which is like a little circle. It goes under your chest and it sort of goes up into your heart, which is where they give you the chemo to stop me from having, you know, cannulas and veins ruined all the time. And I fought that tooth and nail because for me, I've know how to access ports. Like, I've looked after people with ports. People that have ports have cancer. And I was like, I do not have cancer, so I don't know why we're doing this. Like, we just have to sort of keep going. So within the week, I had all of that done. I seen the oncologist, a psychologist, my surgeon, and we started the IVF hormones on the Tuesday. And then we did that for 10 days. And then after 2 weeks, they said, all right, it's time to be, you're good to have your egg retrieval. So I had the egg retrieval on the Monday, and then on the Tuesday I had my first round of chemo. And then we've been on that journey for the last 6 months. So I finished my last round of chemo 2 weeks ago. It hasn't been anything that we planned. We were grateful that my egg retrieval went really well and we were able to make some embryos. So we were really blessed about that because, you know, you're already worried about your fertility in your 30s, and then add on that you're going to have cancer treatment, which is going to impact. They give you drugs to turn off your ovaries and things like that, but they still don't really know the impacts that chemo has. So that sort of put our plans for having a family on hold for quite a few years. But it was a whirlwind. We just sat there. Like, once I'd had that first round of chemo going, what the hell has just happened? Like, our whole life has just completely changed. My husband, you know, we had to deal with it, and we had to tell our family, obviously, and that was really stressful. And it's been quite a journey, but we're nearly on the other side now. So a few more little things to go, but along the way, part of the type of breast cancer I have is called triple negative breast cancer. So it means it's negative to hormones. So a lot of breast cancer is hormone related. That's why it's quite common that it's in women that are later in life. So in their, you know, 40s and 50s, this type of breast cancer has a really strong genetic component to the BRCA gene. Have you guys heard of the BRCA gene?
Yeah. I have. I've actually been tested for it.
Oh, have you? There you go. So it's one of those things. So no one in my family of my generation has had cancer. It was just my aunties who passed away so long ago. And you can only test for the BRCA gene if you have a live relative that has it, because it's not confirmed whether they had it or not, because they passed away. So we will never know. But it's likely, you know, if it looks like a duck and looks like a duck, it's a duck. Like, there were young women that had breast cancer and passed away. This type of breast cancer is really aggressive. It grows really quickly, spreads really quickly. That's why they do chemo now first, because they want to eradicate everything. And try and eliminate its spreading, essentially, which we're hopeful that that has happened in my circumstance. But my gene testing did come back that I have the BRCA1 gene, so they were spot on. So that sort of changes our trajectory of what we're going to do after chemo, because you kind of get given a myriad of options about what you're going to do next, because the cancer is, I had an ultrasound 5 weeks ago, and it's, that they can't find it, which is reassuring. All they can find is the clip. So the chemo has done its job. But then it's sort of with the BRCA1 gene, your risk of getting breast cancer in your lifetime is 72%. And that is a massive statistic. And then your risk of getting ovarian cancer is 45%. So my husband and I had to sit down and have a massive discussion about what the plan was going to be at the end, because the surgeons are amazing. They support whatever you do, but I was not going to go through this chemo process again. Like, I just refuse. I do not want to be going back and doing this, because it's completely disrupted our lives. And it's physically exhausting. Like, I'd done really well for 5 months. And then when I hit that 6 month, I just lost it. I got sick, and it's really hard. And no matter how strong you are, it doesn't matter, because it just ruins you. So we've decided that if all my scans and everything come back good, that we will do a double mastectomy, which will be in a few weeks. And the massive thing with that is, what I struggled with the most was breastfeeding. It would take away that option that I'd get the chance to breastfeed. And as a midwife and someone who's helped so many women learn how to breastfeed, and like the success when their baby finally gets on, and it's just, I know how good the nutrients are, and I've always wanted to experience that myself, and now I won't get to do that. Sorry.
Oh no, don't apologize. I'm so sorry. We wanted to ask you about that, because about the mastectomy, from a scientific perspective, like, it obviously makes a lot of sense from a risk kind of perspective and looking at it. Like, there's 72% chance that, and if you've had breast cancer with the BRCA gene in one breast, is it a 72% chance you'd have it in your second breast, or is it higher?
It's actually higher once you've had breast cancer.
Yeah.
So that statistic is if, like, let's say I had the BRCA gene testing done and it came back, yes, Ellie, you have the BRCA1 gene. My chance of getting breast cancer then was 72%. So now I've had breast cancer, the risk is higher. So that's why they sort of say, if you have a known relative that has the BRCA gene, get tested, because you have the opportunity to have a mastectomy and not get breast cancer. And then your chance of, you know, getting that is minimal, you know, like, we're talking 3 or 4%, like, it's tiny percentages, you know, around that compared to what your risk is when you do have it. It's just unfortunate. We obviously didn't know, but the decision to have a mastectomy is not an easy one. It's no. A lot of women choose not to do it, and I understand why, because, you know, and they offer you the to not do that or to take one breast off and keep one so you can breastfeed. But I think for me, the anxiety of having the breast cancer come back versus just being able to breastfeed, it just wasn't worth it. Like, I was just like, I can survive with having to be here to have a baby is the priority, you know, utmost before breastfeeding. So that still gets me down, because it's sort of just one of those things. But it's just, you know, it's something you just have to accept. And I guess, you know, you just go, okay, it is what it is. Yeah, there's lots of things in this journey that I'm a complete type A personality, and I've had to surrender a lot, because it's, you don't have control. You have people that are telling you what's going on, and that's fine, but it's hard when I've been on the other side. So I know I have had control, which is, you know, yeah, which is hard to surrender to that, but yeah.
Oh, I can't even imagine how hard that decision was, because obviously from that kind of risk mitigation analysis perspective, it's like the data is very much towards having a mastectomy, but then there's that, as you spoke about, that connection with your body, yourself, being able to breastfeed, that it's so much more complex. It's not like looking at it like 72 versus 28. It's so gray and so complex and layered. And I just can't imagine how hard that would have been.
And it's funny, people say, oh, just whip them off. Like, get them off, you don't need them. And I'm like, it's all well and good for people to say that, but it's actually a different reality when it's your body. And my body is going to change. Like, I'm going to have my, and I've never had really, I don't have a tattoo or no piercing. Like, it's completely as it is. So, sorry, that's my brother.
Okay, no problem.
But yeah, it's funny how it's completely the rationale behind it is purely because I don't want to do breast cancer again, and this is my best chance. So then, sort of once we so the plan will be that I'll have a double mastectomy and reconstruction with implants, which I never thought I'd have breast implants, but here we are. And then when we're finished having our family in 10 years' time, I'll have my ovaries removed again to reduce the risk of me getting types of cancer. So our life will now just be risk reduction, essentially, which is not something that you think about when you're so young. You know, it's different from when, I don't know, like when people are older, you kind of go, oh, that's really sad they've got breast cancer, but it's not like a shock, you know, when you're 30, you're 31 and you're telling your friends that you've been friends with for so long, I have cancer, I have breast cancer. They're like, it's just bizarre. Like they don't believe it, you know, or telling your mum and dad, which is just, and your brother, which was just terrible because, you know, my dad and brother, I didn't tell them I had a lump. So they were like, what? What do you mean? Like, it was just completely bizarre out of body experience. But yeah.
Oh, I'm taking a moment to take that in, Ellie, because I can't even fathom what you've been going through. With the chemo, as you've said, it's something that you're not interested in going through again. Is there anything in that process that, I suppose, maybe at the start you didn't think was gonna affect you as much as it actually did?
I think I have a really strong mindset. Like, I'm quite like strong-willed, and I was like, I will not let this beat me. I will get through this. And there were some things that were really hard, and one of the biggest things was losing my hair. And that was like, and I was freaking out about that, because I was like, oh my God, like, it's going to be like, what does my head even look like underneath there? And not having eyebrows, like, just all these things. And then it happened and I was like, oh, it's actually not a big deal. Like, I didn't like it and I still don't like it, but it's actually, it's okay. And a lot of my friends said to me, you know, we don't like you because of your hair, or your eyebrows. Like, we like you because of the person that you are. And I really needed to hear that, because it's just been, that was quite an awful thing to have to go through. It was very bizarre. But now my husband doesn't even, he actually forgets what I look like with hair. And we're looking at photos the other day and he was like, I've forgotten. And then he said the other night he had a dream about me and I was bald. And he was like, is that what happens? You just start, this is how I know you now. And I was like, apparently. Because at home I obviously don't wear anything. And you just kind of have to own it. But that was sort of the, they told me straight up, you know, you'll lose your hair in the next 2 weeks. So, like you have to get ready for that. And that was, yeah, that was hard. But also feeling sick, and I had so much, I like to exercise. Like I like to be, it's just me and my husband. We have a dog, that's it. So we have the freedom to be able to exercise whenever we want. And I love to do that. I love to hike. I love to do all that stuff. And I've never been physically unable to do it, like because I'm sick, not from an injury or anything, but because I physically just can't do it. And sometimes I'd push myself and I'd get in big trouble because I would then become sicker. But I was just so determined to be like, I need to keep moving. I need to do something because, you know, I think sometimes when you lay there, you feel worse because you're like, I'm just laying here feeling sick and sorry for myself. But it's definitely a fine line. Yeah, that for me, that's probably been the hardest part is the loss of my body. And every day I wake up now and I think, oh, I feel a little bit better. Like it's coming, it's slowly coming back, which is so nice. And I'll never take it for granted again because it's, yeah. I think surgery will be different because pain is a different thing. Feeling completely sick and wiped out and no energy is not nice. Yeah, it's not a nice way to live. But the one thing I think that got me through was religiously, I would walk my dog morning and night. And even if sometimes our walks were just a tiny bit around the block, I would still put him on the lead and we'd go. And I committed to doing that because I was like, he's happy because I'm home for 6 months. So we may as well make the most of it and get as many walks in. But just getting outside, I'd, you know, talk to a few neighbours, say hello to a few people on my walk and just interact and be outside was really good for me. Because a lot of my friends and stuff, I had to really be careful with who I mingled with. You know, some of my friends have kids and kids get sick. And when you have no immunity, you are extremely at risk of getting sick. So I was really, you had to kind of, especially the last month or 6 weeks, I had to really isolate myself because getting sick was going to really delay things. And when you've got no immunity, you get really sick and you end up in hospital, which is what happened to me. So it was just inevitable, but happy like that happened at the end. But so it's sort of hard. Like you want to see people and people want to come see you, but it's sort of like sometimes it's tricky. You have to know your limits essentially. Yeah.
Of course.
One, two, three.
So you said for now that in a couple of weeks you're getting a double mastectomy. From there, I mean, it sounds like, especially with the egg retrieval and the success that you had with that part of the process, that you're definitely still keen to try and start a family soon. What does that look like for you guys now? You know, how long is the recovery or what have they kind of told you about your double mastectomy?
Yeah. So I'll have a lymph node removed first and they'll test that to see if that has any evidence of having any cancer cells. If that's all good, then the double mastectomy will go ahead. And then after that, you know, they've said to me the risk of this breast cancer coming back or this type of cancer coming back. So if I have my boobs removed, it's not going to come back in my boobs. It's going to come back somewhere else. So I'll be on like really strict surveillance for the next few years. So they said, look, the risk is really high in the next 2 to 3 years. They said 3 years. So we will start to try for a family after 3 years. And we might be really lucky. We might naturally conceive. But then, you know, in 3 years' time, I'm sort of hitting that 35 age, which was sort of something that I was trying to avoid. We were going to try and have a baby before then just because of, like, I'm well aware of your fertility when you sort of start to hit 35. And then you throw on top of that, I've just been pumped with toxins for the last 6 months. So I don't know what that's done to my egg quality either. But we have the backup of the embryos if we want to use them. So, hopefully 3 years' time, which is not, you know, the plan. We're going to try and, you know, as most couples do. You have your big Europe trip, your last big holiday, just the two of you before you start to have a family. And that's what we were doing. So it sort of pushed things back a bit. But I guess at the end of the day, it's a privilege to have a family. And to be alive to do that is the priority. So if that means that it gets pushed back a few years, I mean, in the scheme of things, it's not a big deal. Like, really, it'll be what it'll be. And if we can't have a family, well, that's fine too, because when you have your life, like, literally it's put in front of you, and it's so, like, it could be taken away from you at any minute. You just think, oh, you're actually lucky to be here at the moment, and to be happy. So, yeah. And I'm privileged. I've never had, like, really anything go wrong. And I know that's not, I don't know, it's a weird thing to say, but I haven't experienced much trauma in my life or negativity. I've been quite lucky. I fell in love with my husband when we were young. I've had a really good career. I've had a good, happy, healthy family. I've had friends that I've been friends with since I was literally in primary school. We're still friends now. So, yeah, I'm very grateful for the life I've had, and I've never taken that for granted, but this just probably makes it more, more obvious, and I'm very lucky.
And I think it's okay to say, I think so often we say things like, oh, when things go wrong, oh, but I'm grateful for X, Y, and Z because I have that. And I think it's important to also acknowledge that it fucking sucks. Like, it's so hard.
Oh, for sure.
And it's not you. I think sometimes we feel like we have to acknowledge our luck and, you know, gratitude, and that's really great and important. But I think too, it's okay to be like, this is so shit.
Really unfair.
And unfair.
And it is really unfair. But I think everyone kept saying that to me at the start. This is so unfair. This is so unfair. I've known life's unfair for a long time because I've looked after so many people, and I think, fuck, this sucks. Mm. How is that fair? How can this nice young person be sick? Like, how the fuck did that happen? Mm. I've been there, and I realised that a long time ago. And so when this happened to me, I just went, God, life's funny, isn't it, sometimes? Like, I don't know why, you know, and maybe this has happened so my family can learn that they have the BRCA gene, you know. You know, I might not be the only one that has it, and I have other girls in my family, and they might be able to get tested and find that they have it before they get breast cancer, you know. And I don't want anyone else to have to go through this, because it's been absolute hell. So if they can, you know, if they can avoid that, then that would be a win. But it does suck, and it is part of life. And I just go, oh, well, it's, and I don't even think, you know, people say, oh, it happened for a reason. I don't know what the reason is in this. Like, I honestly don't know, but it's happened, and we just have to do the best we can and move on and be excited for things that are going to come up. And, you know, hopefully once I have my mastectomy, we can be on the road to recovery, and I can start to rebuild and, you know, look at going back to work and, you know, look at going overseas and having our holiday that we really want to have, and just getting some normality back in our life will be really nice. My husband took a lot of time off work, and I made him go back because I said to him, you can't keep staying home with me. Like, you need to go back, because we are just living in this, and cancer is not our life. It's part of our life at the moment, but it's not our life. So you must go back, because we need to build normality. So the more closer we get to things being normal is really nice. It's exciting. That's what I get excited about anyway.
That's exciting.
Oh, that's such an incredible mindset. And Ali, we wanted to ask you as well, and sharing in so generously coming on and sharing your story. And I think I just want to acknowledge, when you share something, you have to relive it. Yeah. And so it is so generous of you to come on and share and be so vulnerable and generous with what you have shared. What do you want women and people listening to take from your story? What made you want to reach out and come on the podcast?
My main reason was, there were two main reasons. The first one was, I reached out because when I was walking, listening to your podcast, and I thought, oh, God, it'd be so nice if someone got on there that was 31 years old and that had breast cancer and had been through this shit and was real and just was going through what I was going through. Because it's really hard to relate to people going through something who are in a completely different generation to you. Yeah. They don't have the stress of having to deal with IVF, but because they've had their family. They don't have this really stress of that connection to their breasts, because their boobs have done their job. They've breastfed their babies and they don't really care about it, you know. It's been really difficult to have, like, the like relationship with anybody because no one sort of gets it. So to come on here, I thought at least sharing my story, there might be someone else out there who's going through something similar and they just think, oh my God, I know what that person feels like. And the other one was to raise awareness. Like you're never too young to start checking your breasts. To be aware. It's so easy to do. You can do it in the shower, you know, when you are washing your body with some body wash or, you know, and just have a good look at your boobs, like stand in the mirror, have a good look at the breast tissue, because if you notice a change, it's different. It's different to what you know, and then you can go and get it checked out. I was lucky. Something in the universe pulled my attention to that lump. Like I don't, you know, the water bottle, I don't know. Like it was like my attention was being drawn to it. You might not be so lucky next time. So I think it's just really important. It takes 2 seconds. Just get to know your boobs, have a really good look at them, have a really good feel of them. And if there's something different, you can go to your GP. Like, and 9 times out of 10, it'll be absolutely fine. Like I thought mine was, but sometimes it's not. So you better to not be ignorant and to go and get it sorted out. It's just something as young women, we need to be on to. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's so important. And I suppose to your point earlier as well is to understand your family history, especially.
Yeah. 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 Talk to your family. Like it's especially, I mean, I shouldn't say like boys can have it that have the BRCA gene as well. It is really important. It's a gene that's passed down from your mum and dad. So you get 50% of your genes from your mum, 50% from your dad. And it's a 50-50 chance whether you're going to get given the BRCA gene if they carry it. So it's luck of the draw, but it's really important. And people need to not think about it as like a taboo thing. Mm. Knowledge is power. If you know you have it, then you can make decisions or you can at least be aware. And if that means you have more screening, well, great. You know, at least you're on the radar. But I think burying your head in the sand and being a little bit like ignorant about it, it's not going to help you. You know, it's definitely, to me, in my opinion, I'd rather know. So, it's been hard because a lot of family are, I've had to have some really open conversations with my family about it, which is difficult. Not everyone's as open-minded as, you know, most people, you know, some people are. So you just have to be quite honest and think, well, I would, if it was me, I'd rather know. So, yeah.
I just had one more question for you around, for people listening that might not be sick but have people in their lives that are sick. I think so often when things happen that, like I've had friends before that have gone through chemo and other things that I haven't personally experienced. So I then can't put myself in their shoes because I don't know what it feels like. And so then I think so often we get to a place where we don't want to say the wrong thing. We don't want to be insensitive. We don't want to talk about it too much because that might be difficult for them. But then sometimes what happens in that is that we become avoidant. Mm. And I know sometimes I've been so scared I'm going to say the wrong thing that I don't say anything at all. And that is so unfair on the person who is sick. So we wanted to ask you what's the best way for your friends and family to check in on you and be there for you?
I have been extremely privileged because my family and friends, they haven't really treated me any differently. But maybe they've been more like involved than normal. Tuesday was when I would have chemo. Every week for the last, few months, it's been weekly. So I get to Tuesday and I hate Tuesdays now because I was just dreading it. But I would wake up and my phone would be completely inundated with text messages or voicemail messages. My brother would send me crazy videos and just saying one more. Like you can do, you just got to keep going. And they would count down with me and my closest circle. And, there's so many of them. Like I've got friends, cousins, aunties, mum, dad, my brother. They would just, they counted down with me and they actually showed an interest. So I know it's scary. I know sometimes you can't really say the wrong thing because honestly, all I wanted was for people to just be there. And when you can't physically be with somebody, it's so easy to flick a message and just say, one more down, like you can do it. It's just like running a marathon, you just got to get to the next kilometer, And that's kind of how I looked at it. I was like, I just need to keep going. So I think don't ever be afraid that you're going to say the wrong thing and ask the questions because nine times out of 10, we want to debrief about what's going on. And, you know, I had to make a big decision about having a mastectomy, and I had to talk to so many of my friends about it. And, you know, a few of them have had babies and they've breastfed. And like, it was just, it's been a massive decision to make. And how else are you going to do that if your closest friends aren't there and your family's not there? Like, you need them there. So I think that is, don't ever be afraid, because you can never say the wrong thing. I think just reach out, send support. A lot of people send you really funny things, like weird miscellaneous stuff. Like, I don't know. And you're like, I don't need all this crap. Like, I don't understand why I'm getting given all these things. Like, I really don't need it. All I need is you. Like, I just need you there, because when it comes down to it, you know, your friends are the ones that are going to pick you up when anything shit goes wrong in your life, and your family, they're always the ones that are there. So, I've been really grateful. My phone, it's never had a good workout in the last 6 months. I've had so many. I just get contacted all the time, but it's so nice. And I feel grateful because I do have a really good family and a really good circle around me. But yeah, it's, and I think a lot of them have gone, oh my God, what if it was me? Which is what I would do if it was me. I'd be like, I can't imagine. And I'm grateful. Like, I've said this to a few of them. I'm so glad this is happening to me and not to you, because you've got kids, you know, like, you've got other shit. Like, I just think, yeah, I don't know. It's a funny thing to say, but I have said that a fair bit. Because, yeah, I have a cousin, and I said to her, you know, you've got two kids and I would hate this for you to be doing this, you know. So, yeah, it's just one of those things in life. You just have to go, okay, it is what it is. But, yeah, definitely just reach out. Whatever you say, reach out.
That's such good advice. Thank you so much for sharing that. Thank you so much for joining us today, Ali, for sharing your story. We are so grateful. And yeah, you are amazing. And we just can't wait to like see you go to Europe, and you have to share in the community when you do.
Yeah, no, I will. I definitely will. No, how good. I dream about it all the time. I was so close. I said to my husband, I won't believe it till we're on the plane, because I'll be like, oh God, it's just one of those things. Yeah.
Well, good luck with the next month with your treatment. Sending lots of love. Thank you so much for taking the time to share your story.
Thanks so much, girls. Thank you.
Hi, guys. Before we wrap up this episode, we thought it would be important to include some takeaways for you with an expert. So we've got Kirsten Pilati on the phone, CEO of Breast Cancer Network Australia. Hello, Kirsten. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you so much for having me.
No, thank you for coming on. We wanted to start with, at what age should we start checking our breasts?
The message really for all of us is to know what is the normal look and feel of your breasts, because everyone's breasts are different. So the very first most important thing to do is to really make sure that you know and understand your body. And if you see any changes at all, then we want you to go and see your GP and talk about those changes and decide whether it's time for an investigation into those changes.
So does that mean it's as early as basically you start to develop breast tissue, like a young girl?
It definitely is. And we know that it's really unlikely to be a very young girl having breast cancer, but actually knowing the look and feel of your body and then going and having that conversation with the GP is really important. We also know that, you know, in that 30 age group, often GPs will dismiss breast cancer. So what I would say to people is, if you go to your GP and you're worried about something and you want it to be investigated, go to another GP if they're not willing to listen to you and to take your guidance on wanting to get things checked out.
Oh, that's such good advice. Obviously, for everyone listening, we should be checking our breasts all the time. How often should we do it? And then when we're doing it, what should we look out for, especially as you kind of reference, if we, you know, we do find a lump and then we go to the GP and they say, oh, it's fine. I know it's important, obviously, to be in tune with your body, but how do we know if it's something that's abnormal?
One of the things I would say to people, and I, you know, it's often people are looking for a lump, but actually any change can be an important trigger to go and see the GP. So that might be that the nipple has changed, that there is dimpling on the breast. So any kind of change is where you really want to go quickly to see the GP. In most cases, it won't be breast cancer, but we want to make sure we find things early. The earlier we find them, the better the outcomes are for everyone. I think one of the real challenges is in the past, we've had this kind of set a day a month and do a check and, you know, we're quite prescriptive around it. There is no evidence to suggest that being prescriptive about how you go around your breast will actually change you being able to find it. I would say, you know, start regularly checking and feeling your breast and looking at yourself in the mirror, lifting up your arms, seeing if there's any change or dimpling. And certainly if anything is coming out of the nipple, then please go and have that checked. And often people, you know, who are breastfeeding can dismiss where they're not sure, thinking it's mastitis. They're all really important things to be on top of. So whether you're pregnant, breastfeeding, any changes, it's really best to go and get that reassurance from the GP about making sure that you are as healthy and your breasts are as healthy as possible.
Oh, that's such great advice. I think especially around when you're something like, for example, in pregnancy, where
changed so much.
Exactly. But there are, I have spoken so devastatingly to a lot of women who didn't listen to their body during that time because it was changing anyway and kind of disregarded it or things as, oh, it's because of the pregnancy or because I'm breastfeeding or whatever it might be. And then it's actually turned out to be something else. So that's really good advice.
Yeah, I think trust your gut. We know ourselves better than anyone else. And, you know, as I say, if you've also not found a health professional who's listening to you, find another one. And we hear all too often in the younger people with breast cancer that they're, you know, they thought and knew something was wrong, but that everyone kept dismissing them, saying you're too young. Well, you know, it's better to be safe than sorry. And we know the earlier we can get breast cancer, the better it will be. And, you know, the survival rates are excellent for us if we get breast cancer early. And so really knowing and understanding your body and listening to it, you know, there's no one that knows your body better than you.
Well, thank you, Kirsten, for your time today and for everything you do as well.
Thank you so much. And I just would also remind people that breast screen do actually see people from the age of 40 as well. So if you're over 40, you are eligible to go to breast screen for the 2 yearly mammograms. And the other advice I would give people is to know and understand your risk. So understand if there are other family members who've had breast cancer, how old they were, and have those important conversations around what might be your risk with the GP. And then you can put appropriate monitoring in place for you. So everyone will be different. We just want everyone to be breast aware and as I say, trust your gut and go and seek help. But if you need more information, you can come to BCNA and we will support you through that.
Thank you so much.
Pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening, everyone. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you would like to get involved in the Kick Pod, you can. We have got a Kick Pod Instagram where you can send us a DM about your thoughts on the podcast, some questions, some stories that happened to you. Honestly, whatever you want to send in, we would love to see and read it and hear it and chat to you. And that is at KickPod on Insta.
We would also appreciate your following if you would like to support the podcast. Come and follow that account. That is where we'll be sharing a lot of this kind of content. So we hope you guys enjoy that. If you want to learn more about Kick, the Kick app, we have a website, kickapp.com, or you can head to the Apple App Store or Google Play Store and download our app. We have a 7-day free trial if you'd like to check out the app. And we're also on Instagram at laura.henshaw and at Steph Claire Smith. And you can find us over on TikTok as well at Kick. But we'll be back in your ears very soon.
Bye.